Coming up, it's Browns Weekend with Vic Carucci right here on 92.3 The Fan.
Vic Carucci with you for another edition of Cleveland Browns Weekend. Get ready for a full hour of Browns discussion right here on 92.3 The Fan. We have got a jam-packed show for you this morning. You're going to meet one of the Browns' new assistant coaches, offensive line coach Mike Sullivan. He's actually a familiar face back for his third stint on the Browns coaching staff. You're also going to hear from Browns defensive tackle Phil Taylor, who's going to talk about a great cause, helping the victims from the recent West Texas fertilizer plant explosion. It took place near the campus of Baylor University, from where the Browns made Taylor a first-round draft pick a couple of years ago, so it's something near and dear to his heart. And we'll also get into some football discussion with Big Phil, talk about his role as a nose tackle in the Browns' new 3-4 defense. And we've got the voice of the Browns, Jim Donovan, with us. We'll talk about the great honor he received during the week, a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Northeastern Ohio chapter of the National Football Foundation, and we'll get his takes on the Browns' rookie minicamp this weekend. We'd like to give you a national perspective on the show, and we'll be doing that again this morning with our good buddy Jason Cole, who covers the NFL for YahooSports.com. We'll get Jason's thoughts on the Browns' draft and where he sees the team headed from here. That and much, much more for you on Cleveland Browns Weekend on 92.3 The Fan. And we'll get things started this morning with a conversation with Browns offensive line coach Mike Sullivan. Your third stint as an assistant coach for the Browns, and that makes you unique, really, from others here. I know Rob Jedzinski was here previously as offensive coordinator, but for you to be back here a third time, what's that mean?
It means a lot to me, Vic, and I've known you since I think my first stint here. So you've seen me progress as far as I've spent enough time here to find a wife, to have one of my three children here, and I definitely know my way to the cafeteria. I know the little nooks and crannies of the building, and it's exciting. It's exciting for me because I felt like I've invested a lot in this organization as they have in myself, and it feels good to have a chance to come back. And you always want to finish it right, and I believe that this is meant to happen.
I'm glad you brought that up about investing, because I think the emotional investment that people see with Chutt as someone who grew up in Toledo as a Browns fan, that he knows what this team means to the community. I know that's not a prerequisite to be a coach here or a player here, but it has to help. And you, as you say, you have that connection. You know what the Browns are to this community, what they've been for many years. And as you're doing your job, as you're studying and preparing and doing the best you can to help the offensive line in specifically, but the team in general, get better, you do it with an eye toward what that means to the fan base.
No, it's an organization that obviously everybody here knows how steep it is in history, but it's nothing that I had ever taken for granted. Being born and raised in Chicago, there was a similar organization with the Bears. I mean, they have a lot of history, a lot of great players, and their fans live and die. And when I first came up here in 2001, I thought it was a mirror image of the fan base and how they live and die with the team and how they follow the team and how loyal they are to the team. And as you mentioned about Chutt, I mean, I knew back in 1986. I mean, Chutt was in Miami, Florida, in a bunch of flannels and Cleveland Browns sweatshirts when it was 95 degrees and humid down there. And I mean, that's it's in his blood, and every day when you come to work, that's it's a different dynamic when you have somebody at the top that's invested like he is.
And let's talk about that connection. You and Chutt were teammates at the University of Miami. That's where you became close friends. You were an offensive lineman. You were a center on that team. He was a tight end on that Hurricanes team. Brad Roll was there, your strength and conditioning coordinator here in Cleveland now. But talk about the connection that you made with Chutt back then, and in any possible way, could you have envisioned the two of you working together as coaches? And I know you had that previous stint together in the 07 campaign here with the Browns when you were here. And then now, just could you see that? Could you see a coach in the future in Chutt and in yourself?
Chutt as a player, I would have to say I didn't envision it, because I would say on our team, Chutt was definitely one of the more cerebral players, but I didn't think after he was done playing, I didn't think that would be the path he would go down. I mean, he was working outside of football for a while. And then when he made the jump back in, you can kind of see how he dove in. I mean, and it wasn't one of those casual, let me just see if I like football. I mean, he found it. He knew exactly the time that he had spent away from football. I think he knew when he got back in that this is where he was supposed to be. And not a lot of people know. I mean, he has a graduate degree. He has his MBA degree. We went to school together and finished up our graduate degrees there. But I see a lot of how he approaches the team. There's a lot of graduate work type organization, and there's a lot of scheduling. He's someone that like I said, I didn't really envision him at the beginning when he first got out of football, but when he first got back in, I knew he was going to be a head guy someday.
Now let's talk about yourself. A very interesting career as far as a coaching path. Germany, Spain, France. The Peterborn Dolphins in Germany, the Rue Imperials in Spain, and pronounce the France one for me, the La Courneuve
Flash.
And you were head coach for the team in Germany and head coach in Spain as well. What were those experiences like for you? And you're dealing with players, I'm guessing a lot of course, European players who don't have it ingrained as much, obviously, as a sport is in America. So how was that to deal with as a coach?
Just for full disclosure, I'm just going to throw it out there that this stint in my life was nothing more than trying to avoid getting a real job at the time. So
I love your honesty.
It was a way.
I didn't want to say that. I mean, come on.
The club leagues, Vic, and I'm sure you've heard some stories about it. There've been occasional books written about them, but they're teams that it'd be equivalent here to maybe a rugby team that. You get a bunch of diehard guys that might be go out on Tuesday and Thursday after work, and then they'll play a match every Saturday or every other Saturday. And the rest of the time, they're just normal, everyday people. And that schedule at the time fit me perfectly. I had practice from 7 to 9 twice a week, go travel, whatever team that we were going to play, we'd go travel, and I'd kind of slowly work my way back because I didn't have practice until 7, 8 o'clock on Tuesday night. So, and the best thing is in Spain with the when I did 2 years in a little bit outside of Barcelona is with the daytime siesta, their practice didn't begin until 10:15 at night, and most of the guys were late. So I mean, it was what I mean. So I had a full day. I had a full day of event before my 10:30 practice had to start. But it was coaching wise. I don't know, the X's and O's weren't as stimulating as what Norv's offense might be, but it was getting back down to the grassroots of it, the organic part of it is just, it was a bunch of guys who loved to play ball and they were hungry for it. And you had to be very creative in how you were teaching these guys because their background, they didn't grow up with the sport. Most of them were guys that just either couldn't play soccer because they were too big or they just weren't good enough athletes.
Any language barrier issues though?
There was always enough guys that would speak English, and then in Spain I made a concerted effort to learn the language, and it was part of my barter. The salary, I didn't have to negotiate maybe as hard as Chud did on salary, but part of it, a lot of it is barter, barter system, and what you end up doing is I ended up my final bullet point on my contract is I wanted to have Spanish lessons from a legitimate Spanish teacher, so I was hardcore. They didn't want to renegotiate with me.
Drove a hard bargain. Mike Sullivan joins us, offensive line coach for the Browns. So we're talking about 97 to 2000, your European tour. In 2001, you're back at Miami as a graduate assistant, your school, Miami, Florida. And then 01 to 04, your first stint with the Browns as assistant offensive line coach, and really your first taste of the NFL. So what kind of experience was that in terms of influencing you? And start talking about some of the coaching influences that you've had in your career.
Well, it's funny. I mean, we talked about Chud a second ago, but, that year in 2001, I just got back from Paris and had agreed to go back and coach a team in Austria. I just really wanted to keep traveling, and my degree was in international business, and I thought it was a way for me to at least get some legitimate bullet points on my resume without having to foot the total bill of it. So my idea was to keep going in this European football league and just coach in as many countries as I could to kind of bolster my employability. But I met Chud for lunch A little stint in between going back to Austria, and Chud had mentioned at the University of Miami there was an opening. So he said, why don't you come down and, you know, see if you like coaching real ball. And I was, you know, I was slightly offended because I thought we were playing real ball over there. But I got his point, and I decided to take a shot. And Butch Davis at the time was a head coach at Miami, and he was gracious enough to let me on. I didn't have any idea at the time that these graduate assistant posts had become as coveted as they had become, because back in the day you could have as many as you wanted, and sure, you know, if you had 10 GAs it was up to whatever team. After the fact, when I learned that these spots were now limited to two spots, one on offense, one on defense, and they were high volume applications to get the job, so Butch was gracious enough to let me come down there. And the very first staff meeting is when he resigned and took the job up here in Cleveland. So my promotion from college to NFL was as fast as I would have ever expected.
And what were some of the things you picked up from a Butch Davis? And what are some of the – because I'm going to guess that he'd be the earliest major influence on you, but a guy, of course, who was focused primarily on the defensive side of the ball. But what are some of the early takeaways you had that have been shaping your coaching thinking now?
I would even go back a step further, because I kind of equate Butch and, you know, these coaching trees, I think it's the term gets thrown around, but Butch Davis would definitely be on a Jimmy Johnson coaching tree if there was one. And Butch was very similar to Jimmy in a lot of ways for me when I watched him. Now, he was on the defensive side of the ball, so I never immediately was coached by him. But the coaching philosophy of being high energy, be upbeat, but number one, be prepared. You know, let these players know that you've invested time in them and that you care about them and that you're on their side. And there's going to be peaks and valleys with each player. I mean, you know, you wish you could have a bunch of guys on your roster that that everything goes just as you would have planned it if you were written you know, your biography after the fact, but it doesn't happen. But Jimmy and Butch and all the guys, you know, even Chud, the guys I've been around, have all been player first loyalty, and it's hard to do. It's easy to say, it's hard to do, but I think at the end of the day, these guys appreciate it.
You go back to the Browns in 2007-08. So that second stint, how did that differentiate from the first one? I know it's different people, obviously, in the coaching staff, and you were working with Rob, so that I'm sure that was a factor in things. But give me a sense of what it was like the second time around.
The second time around is it started out, it was very exciting, because the team we were brought in as an offensive staff in the middle of Romeo's tenure, 4 years. So we came in his third year, and previously the first 2 years they didn't do a great job, and then we were really made a race at the playoffs that 2007 year, and I really thought we had something going. You know, I mean, it was an exciting time. The offense was scoring points, and you again, we go back to the city and the energy and the fans, and to get a taste of them being excited and them seeing the hope that it's not just the Browns playing, but the Browns playing for a playoff spot. Ultimately, we didn't get there, but I felt the energy and the juice that kind of when I got back here is what I'm feeling now, is what I'm hoping. You know, and everybody is that, listen, there's a honeymoon period, and I know every team, the NFL has done such a great job of setting up that it really is a year-to-year proposition in the NFL. Any team really has a shot. Now, some teams have a better shot with their skill player, quarterback, or whatever. But we in 2007 thought we were on an upswing, and it was a great lesson, because it's a year-to-year proposition.
Well, we appreciate, Mike, you taking the time and going through this really very interesting career of yours, and we do wish you all the best, and we'll do this again.
They like to call me the Vince Lombardi of Europe, if you could spread that around.
Awesome.
Coming up, Vic Carucci talks to the voice of the Browns, Jim Donovan. It's Browns Weekend on 92.3 The Fan. 92.3
The Fan. Now, back to more of Cleveland Browns Weekend on 92.3 The Fan.
We welcome now the voice of the Browns, Jim Donovan, and the recipient of a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Northeastern Ohio chapter of the National Football Foundation. Congratulations, buddy.
Thank you, Vic. It was a wonderful night in Westlake, and gosh, it was just a great, great night. It was great to see everybody. You're with a lot of outstanding student athletes that are there.
Sure.
Urban Meyer, Jim Tressel, Larry Karras, the great coach at Mount Union, a lot of great high school coaches. Just a wonderful night. I mean, it really was. Jimmy Haslam, the owner of the Browns, was there with a little update on what's going on with the Cleveland Browns as we come out of the draft and approach rookie minicamp. And it was a real honor. First of all, the award named after Dino Lucarelli, who, as you well know, one of the all-time great people in Cleveland sports. And no matter where you are and no matter who you meet, if they have come into some meeting or connection with Dino Lucarelli, everybody says the same thing. Classiest guy,
great guy.
Wonderful person. And so I accept that that honor and that award with great, great humility because of the wonderful person he is.
Well, you definitely reflect all those qualities that we know Dino to have. I want to ask you this, too. Because at a time when you get something like that, it makes you reflect a little bit and think about all the years, Jim, that you've done this, that you've been the voice of this team. And I love one of the things you said last night, talking about the duty, responsibility that comes with being kind of this ambassador for the Browns fan.
Well, yeah. And, people talk to me more about it. And, last night, it strikes me, anytime, Vic, anyone says, here's Jim Donovan, the voice of the Cleveland Browns, there's something that goes up the back of your spine, and your hair just kind of stands up a little bit, because I remember all the nights that I would take my tape recorder with four size D batteries and C90 cassette tapes and ask my dad, hey, Dad, do you mind if when we go to the Boston Garden tonight, if you mind if I call the play-by-play of the Bruins game from my seat, section 77, row F, seat 13? He'd say, no, that's all right. Right. And, and that's how it starts. And I know that there are a lot of kids out there that want to get into this line of the business. And, sure. And that's how I started. And it makes it all, worthwhile, because that's the ultimate honor. Now, here in Cleveland, to be recognized as an ambassador or as the voice of the Cleveland Browns, it's not a big club. There haven't been a lot of voices of the Cleveland Browns.
Right.
And it's because it's such a great job and it's such a wonderful honor to hold that position. Gibb Shanley, Jim Mueller, Nev Chandler, Casey Coleman, Jim Grainer, a lot of great, Ken Coleman, just to name a few. But there aren't many more than that. And so to be in that club has been just something that, I really hold deep to my heart, because people really, they want to ask you questions about the Browns and they expect you to have the answers for them, because you really are not only a voice of the team on Sundays, but really every other day of the week and in, every day of the year, really.
Right. And Jim, it's doubly satisfying. It has to be gratifying, because on top of doing this for as long as you have, you've also dealt with the personal health issue of battling leukemia and doing it so triumphantly, and I'm so proud of you for that. More so, I mean, you're as well as a colleague, you're a great friend, and think about you along those lines, and how you've dealt with that, and you didn't let it, other than you had to take a little time off prior to that 2011 season, but truly, it's something that you weren't going to let stop you to achieve all that you're doing here.
It helped me so much in the years of going through that. Those were the only 3 hours that I never thought about having the disease. I mean, really, I can tell you, Vic, it could be Christmas morning and everybody could be opening up presents.
Yep.
And I would pause and say, boy, this is great. I'm having a great time, but I still have leukemia. But those 3 hours, 1 to 4 on those Sunday afternoons during the fall and winter months when I was calling the Browns game, are the only 3 hours that I could escape of not having the disease. And I, they were so important to me.
It's cathartic.
It is.
And you and I can relate.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm a cancer survivor too, and I said the same thing. The job is what gets you through it.
Yeah.
If you stick to that, because that's where I'm going to use the word comfort zone is, but you're right. That's where your mind goes and takes you off of the constant thought. We never forget it. And you and I have compared notes on this many, many times. But I think your handling of it, your courage with it is inspirational. And it was and I want to tell you, inspirational to me in a big way.
Well, thank you. And I have to tell you, it also was a part of the goal. And the goal was to get through it. And I knew it was going to be filled with a lot of bumps and turns and twists, and it was. But the goal was to get back in that booth and recapture those 3 hours every Sunday afternoon. Mm-hmm. And to get to that goal, to get across that goal line, so to speak, was so important. And that, you know, pulled you through some tough times.
And you got a great partner in
the
Doug
best.
Deacon.
Yeah, the best.
Who I know doesn't just value you as in a business sense, but loves you like a brother. And the two of you, the chemistry that you've built with him has been amazing.
Well, you know, it's two guys sitting in a booth, just like two guys sitting in his two season ticket holders sitting beside each other in the same seats for years and years and years, 14 going on 15 for Doug and I. And it's just two guys on a Sunday afternoon just talking football and talking about what's going on with the Browns that day. And, you know, just a lot of laughs, a lot of great times. And somebody that is, like you put it so right, he's like a brother to me.
We are talking with Jim Donovan. He is the voice of the Browns, the recipient, and we congratulate him on the Lifetime Achievement Award from the Northeastern Ohio chapter of the National Football Foundation. He received that last night in Westlake. All right, to the topic of the Browns. When this weekend is over, when the Browns finish their rookie minicamp, what do you want to see? What do you want to be your biggest takeaway?
Well, I want everybody to be healthy, because I remember, and Browns fans, remember this. If you remember Sean Jones coming out of the University of Georgia, coming to his rookie minicamp, he was a pretty significant high draft choice of Butch Davis and was supposed to be the safety of the future for the Browns. And he went up in the air and he came down and kind of like Gokong-like in training camp last year. But, you know, no contact, but he went up in the air and he twisted his knee and, you know, Sean lost his rookie year. So I want everybody to come out healthy. Here's the thing that always interests me. Somebody in that 18, you know, numbered group of undrafted free agents is going to start on the road to opening up people's eyes and making the team. It was Josh Cripps a long time ago.
Right.
It was Tashaun Gibson and these kind of kids that made the team, you know, last year. And that's what's going to happen here this weekend. I'm always interested to see who's the kid that wasn't drafted but was signed by the Browns when they were done picking in the 3 days of the NFL draft that, you know, opens up coach's eyes and says, all right, we want him back at training camp. Okay, let's put him out on special teams. Okay, he did well on special team. Let's put him in the base defense or do something like that. Those are always the great stories, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think these guys get their first chance because everyone can say, well, this isn't a big evaluation period, but it is for them.
Sure.
This is really the only chance that this coaching staff and that this player personnel staff can really determine, I think, what they have. I mean, they can know about college accomplishments and look at all the film they want, but really, when they get them out on the field, I mean, and this applies to the draft picks. Barkevious Mingo and Leon McFadden aren't making the Browns from this. They're there. They're on it, but for the most part. But when you look at draft picks that are at the lower echelon of this team, and that's pretty much all this draft was. It was two guys at the top and three at the bottom. With the five picks. But all these 18 undrafted guys, as you mentioned, plus guys that are going to be brought in for tryouts, the quarterbacks that they're going to have throwing the routes to these guys, I think get a good long look.
Yeah, they do. And I mean, imagine every play, every rep they get, every throw they make, every pass route they run is, I mean, this is it.
Yeah.
You know, one drop or, you know, one pick or, you know, one misread, you know, can really take you out of the sight line of a coach and you just become on the other list, the cut list. So they live really dangerously. I mean, they live for every play, but somebody's going to do it. I mean, it might not, it may be more than one, but somebody will do it. And those are always the great stories, I think, you know, coming out of rookie mini camps, and then the overall mini camp, and then into training camp.
Jim, the other thing about this session, I think from a coach's standpoint, is it's education for them. Brian Baker was on this show, the outside linebackers coach for the Browns, yesterday, talking about how for the coaches it's a refresher course. They had that voluntary mini camp to work through with these guys about, again, teaching them the basics and principles of how this 3-4 defense is going to run. And I think for them, it's important, as Baker pointed out, to get working with players to learn some of the techniques they can use in teaching them. Because essentially, they're teaching rookies, but everybody's new to this scheme.
You're right. And this is truly a teaching weekend for them. You're right. And on both sides of the page, I mean, teaching these players and then also these players learning these coaches' styles and how to impress them and how to get the system into their head, into their play, out onto the field and make it right. And you start to learn practice habits here. You know, you start to find out who's the guy that's really a good practice player. Who's the quick learner here? Who can we trust with a little little bit more than maybe we're giving another guy in the same position. So it's a fascinating weekend, but you're right. Everybody here, veteran, rookie, undrafted rookie, free agent, tryout guy, everybody's really in the same class right now because it's all so new. New staff, new team, really.
It's going to be interesting to see how it all shakes out by the end of the weekend, and it'll give us more to talk about next week.
Absolutely. All right. The weeks are getting quick, though, aren't they?
They are.
Coming up from Yahoo Sports, Jason Cole on Browns Weekend on 92.3 The Fan.
Sports Radio, 92.3 The Fan.
Now, back to more of Cleveland Browns Weekend on 92.3 The Fan.
We go to the Rebel Wireless Hotline now to be joined by Jason Cole of YahooSports.com, covers the NFL there. Jason, I want to start with your thoughts on the Browns draft, just in general, what you see them doing, and it wasn't much in terms of total players. We're only talking five guys, but particularly with the pickups of Barkevious Mingo, Leon McFadden, how much do you think the Browns helped themselves?
Well, look, I think so much just depends on what kind of player is Mingo. Is Mingo what everybody thinks in the next sort of Javon Curse kind of athlete who can come in and be a dominant pass rusher right away, and this dynamic athlete who you have to sort of redraw the X's and O's for and really, you know, harass as an offense? Or is he the downside, which is kind of an inexperienced football player with, you know, inconsistent, you know, production? Yeah, you know, a lot's going to hinge on Mingo. If he's a great player, this is a great draft. If he's a mediocre player, it's a mediocre draft. It's all really on him because you have so few players. I will say this. I give him a lot of credit for getting Josh Gordon a year ago, so give him some credit on that one. That was their second-round pick. I think that Josh Gordon, when you put him up against a lot of the receivers who are in this draft, he measures up very, very well. I put him up against a guy like a Tavon Austin. And just say, look, I'd almost rather have Gordon because of the size. So that's a really valuable pick. McFadden, I think, is going to come in and play and be a productive guy. Is he a number one? Probably not. But you know, you got Hayden. You know, they're in pretty good shape there.
Yeah, you talk about McFadden, and a lot of folks point to the height thing, that maybe just under 5'10", he isn't tall enough to make an impact. But there were some who had a second-round grade on him, actually, Jason. I don't know what your pre-draft research was on McFadden, but there were some people who just said, despite the lack of height, that there's a player there.
Yeah, there's a player there. I mean, you're going to have to play off coverage with him a little bit more, and you can't get up and bump with him as much as you'd like. You can't put him in bad situations too much. But, look, he's a capable player. This is a deep, deep draft for corners. That's one of the reasons he fell a little bit in the eyes of some. But, look, again, you're talking about your number two corner, not your number one corner. And when you've got a great number one corner like they have in Joe Hayden, you know, you can go get a guy like a McFadden, and you're pretty well set at that position.
Interesting story out of Atlanta. Linebacker for the Falcons, Sean Weatherspoon, was talking to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and saying that during the course of one day of offseason workouts, most of it from a defensive perspective was devoted to stopping the read option or dealing with it. Do you sense that is – Mike Smith, I mean, is obviously one of the better coaches in this league and a defensive-minded guy trying to look around the corner. Can you get a drift just from who you've spoken with around the league that there is this – that more of this is going to happen, that teams just have to spend more time defensively doing something in light of all the read option stuff we saw last season?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look, it's part of the game. You've got, you know, a bunch of really athletic quarterbacks who can throw it really well between, you know, Russell Wilson, RG3, Colin Kaepernick. I mean, these are explosive athletes who are running this offense. I mean, there are going to be some other guys who come along. You know, Manziel, if he makes it in the NFL, you're going to have to deal with him in this kind of an offense. He's not quite the same kind of long-distance runner that, say, Kaepernick is, but you got to be prepared for it, and you have to have a plan. And one of the things is, it's like anything, you spend an entire day, an entire week on it during the offseason so that you have a plan ready to install when you get to the regular season, because you're not going to spend a lot of training camp on this stuff, okay? And if you get into the season and you haven't gone through a week of install on this defense, if you're doing it for the first time, sometimes, you know, guys kind of forget how they're supposed to do it, and they, all of a sudden they're thinking instead of just reacting. So you want to spend a lot of time right now, learning how to just react to playing against this offense. And the other thing you have to do is you can't really show the same defensive attack, system, time after time after time, because then the read option quarterback will figure that out and he'll adjust. So what you have to do is you have to install four or five different ideas that you alternate from time to time when you see this. And the thing about it is you may not see it. You just have to be prepared for it, because the beauty of San Francisco against Green Bay in the playoffs is they hadn't run that offense for weeks. And then they bring it out against Green Bay, and Green Bay just was not ready for it. So that's why you have to spend time now doing it, and not necessarily during the season, because you don't know when it's necessarily going to happen.
Makes sense. Jason, outstanding. Thank you so much for your time, my friend.
Anytime. Be good. Thanks, Vic.
Now, back to more of Cleveland Browns Weekend on 92.3 The Fan.
Joined now by Phil Taylor, Browns defensive tackle. And Phil, you're involved in a very special cause with West Texas, the explosion that happened in a fertilizer plant there, very close to the Baylor University campus where you went to school. And it touched you in such a way that you wanted to do something to help there. And you got involved with getting some T-shirts made to get some awareness going to help those folks. 14 people died in that tragedy.
Yeah, I just wanted to give back. Me going to Baylor for 3 years, I was a part of that. The Baylor community, the West Texas community, because it's only 15 minutes away from campus. So just wanted to give back, and let people know that, I haven't forgot, dealing with, the other things that are going on that it kind of, overshadowed the, situation in Texas. So I just wanted to let people know that, it's not forgotten.
And you mentioned that there were other things going on, the Boston tragedy, the Boston Marathon happening, that bombing simultaneous with this, and people's attention were pulled in a lot of different directions. And like you said, it was easy to overlook, but you didn't let yourself overlook it. When you heard it happen, how shocked were you by that?
I was shocked because, like I said, it happened 15 minutes away from campus, and a lot of the people, a lot of people at Baylor, they can be from that community. They know people that, may have lost their lives, and I just wanted to give back, help those families out, in whatever way I can. So all the proceeds from the shirts are going to those families.
And let's talk about the shirts. How were they designed? What was the thought process in putting them together? I understand the Baylor Bear is wearing a West Texas High varsity jacket in it, which is kind of cool. And so describe that a little bit, and how many guys on the Browns team you've gotten to wear them.
The shirts are, it's the yellow and green to represent the Baylor with the bear, and then, the West Texas Letterman, and, the We Are West Texas, just to let people know that it's not forgotten, and, we're standing strong for West Texas. And the guys on the team that wore the shirts yesterday to help support was, Brandon Whedon, Joe Hayden, TJ Ward, Josh Gordon, Greg Little, and Chris Obermanaya.
That's nice. And you have other friends, like entertainment, right? Rappers and such, who are also on board with this?
One of my closest friends, Stolly, he's going to buy a few shirts to support and things like that. And I know a country singer that's a big Baylor fan, Sarah Beth. She's a country singer, so she's going to, support as well.
That's great. Talk a little bit about football with you. You've been part of these off-season workouts, this program, since it began. You had the voluntary mini-camp session, and now you're basically going through a lot of classroom work and a lot of work with Brad Roll, the strength and conditioning coach. Give me a sense of what that's been like for you, and what have you noticed just from your own standpoint and maybe physical improvements and such that you're making?
We've noticed a lot. A lot of the running, we're doing a lot more running this year so we can be in better shape than we were last year. And the guys are loving it, in the weight room with the music, just a great atmosphere. And Coach Rowe always has us laughing, and then he has us working hard. He makes sure we don't slack off in the weight room. So Coach DeSanto and Coach D, all those guys are great coaches in there, and we're having a great time.
What's been the individual focus for for you, because when a strength and conditioning coach takes a look, especially a guy he's never worked with before, takes a look at you, Phil Taylor, and says, okay, these are the things we got to focus on to allow you to be more successful, and then in a larger sense, the team more successful. What are some of those areas you're concentrating on?
We're focusing on everything. It's not, you know, we're not singling out one thing. We're just trying to get better in every way we, you know, every way we do things. And with this, you know, the new guys on defense and offense, you know, this is going to be a different Browns team this year. You know, I can't wait to get out there.
And for you, it's a 3-4 scheme. When you arrived here, obviously, 2 years ago, it was a 4-3, and you spent your first couple of seasons as part of that. How big of an adjustment is it for you?
It's not too much of an adjustment. I'll still be playing the nose, and I mean, the defense is, you know, once you know how to, you know, play a defense, doesn't matter if it's 3-4, 4-3, or whatever, you know, once you know your calls and, you know, where you got to go, I mean, all of it is kind of like the same.
Is there a sense of excitement, too, that it is something new, a different level of energy? Do you feel that within the locker room and among your teammates?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a whole new Browns team. Like I said, the energy level, you know, the guys we got, you know, we're, you know, learning the offense, defense, and the camaraderie is coming together, like, really fast, and I like it.
And, again, on the West Texas shirts, where can people go to purchase them?
All right, people can go to aamanagementgroup.com/shop. You know, that's where you can get the shirts. And, you know, they got all sizes, all the way up to 4X, and it ships anywhere in the world.
What's your size? Is it 3X?
3X.
3X,
yeah,
okay. Just check it.
Yep.
Nose tackle's got to be at least that.
Yep.
Thank you. Phil, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Vic Carucci, thanking you so much for joining us on Cleveland Browns Weekend. Want to remind you to catch us at the same time next Saturday morning right here on 92.3 The Fan. And don't forget to follow me on Twitter at VICCARUCCI and check out my blog, Carucci's Call, presented by Revel Wireless throughout the week on ClevelandBrowns.com.